You are listening to the award-winning The PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Bookie Building. You can reach us in the studio at 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. Come support local businesses and music. Green Park Cafe in Toulouse is having an open mic night the first Friday of every month, acoustic music only. Green Frog Cafe is located at 110 Bridge Street in Police. For more information, contact the Green Frog Cafe at 878-1490. The SEB is accepting applications for Battle of the Bands on April 2nd. Submissions are due March 6th. Turn in the press kits at the SEB office on the ground floor of the Cub. Press kit should include a bio, a photo, 3-song demo, lyrics, equipment list, stage plot, entrance fee, and a copy of your WSU ID. For more information, contact Kristen or Amy at 335-3505. If you're interested in a public service announcement, just like the ones you just heard, then come by the KZUU office or go online. Fill out a PSA form with all the information of your event. For more information, call Lucas at 335-2208. Alrighty, in the studio today, I have a very, very special treat. The man who needs no introduction, but I'll introduce him anyway. He is a professor here at Washington State University. He's the voice of the WSU men's basketball team and the WSU Cougar football team. He's also a member of the Kiwanis Club, and he is the mayor of the city of Pullman, Glenn Johnson. Glenn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for inviting me in, and didn't know if you wanted to do a big introduction. I would, start saying, "And now!" but that probably just blew off the amplifier, didn't it?
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, making it sound like you do at the basketball game, but I was afraid that would, like you said.
We'd overmodulate and get to Spalding or something.
Yeah, so I figured I'd cut it down a little bit and make it a little bit better.
Okay, my big question is, what does PES stand for?
The PES. Well, the show originally was called a couple years ago, The Peter Eichmann Show.
Oh, I see.
And Peter has since moved on and graduated and everything like that. And I wanted to sort of keep some relation with the old show and sort of move it up. So now it's just The PES.
I was hoping it wasn't post-electrical syndrome. No. Somebody got electrocuted at one time and we're still having a problem we're dealing with here.
No, nothing like that. And, I have to tell you, sometimes I have a hard time reading the PSAs and I get tongue twisted, but when you have somebody like Glenn Johnson in here overlooking you, it makes it really, really hard.
We want to put you on pressure at all times.
I know. It's almost like, when you're a mechanic but you have a master of the craft looking over your shoulder when you're fixing the car, it's nerve wracking. But anyway.
You made it just fine.
Yes, thank you.
You got the commercials done. You can pay for the area, right? Is that what you have to do?
Exactly. So now we can have some fun. We brought Glenn on the show mainly to talk about the city of Pullman and hopefully the upcoming growth and what the city goals are that have been solicited from the people of the city. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But since he's here, let's talk a little bit about WSU sports because, that's been Glenn and WSU football have gone hand in hand for 20 some odd years. What, 26?
I'm in my 26th year doing PA for the Cougar football and basketball team.
And, I was thinking about that last night, and I was like, I don't know if I should bring this up, but, there are people who are going to school here that now have kids going to school here that all listen to Glenn Johnson.
Thanks a lot. Reminds me that I am getting, the gray hair started when I was 26, and so I have to remind students once in a while that just because I have gray hair does not mean I went to school with Edward R. Murrow. I just want to make sure that's very clear, and I wasn't right there with Marconi, okay? So, but it is, I do have students now who contact me and say, Glenn, hey, just want to let you know, my 18-year-old daughter's now coming to WSU, and she's going to major in comm, and I'm saying, I knew it was going to happen because I heard that from professors who'd been here for a while, and they said, when the kids start to come, that's when you start to feel it. But the other thing is I enjoy teaching, and I really enjoy working with students. And as long as you continue to enjoy it, that makes it fun. And going to work, as long as you have, you know, good people that you work with, no problem whatsoever. I'm really enjoying it. I enjoy the teaching. I teach classes in TV news and communications management. Also supervise interns. And then, of course, the other duties is being mayor and some of the things that go along with that, because they give you a lot of committees. You know, you're just not mayor. You're also chair of the airport board. I'm serving, I want you to know this, on the influenza committee. Yes.
Well, you're not doing a good job, because I'm sick right now, Glenn. Well,
I'm sure glad you're in the other room. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
But yes, there is an influenza committee that's made up of WSU and city and emergency and health. We have the medical head of the Whitman County there. And so we meet once a month because we, just like Spokane in the Spokesman Review this morning, talked about what happens if the avian flu does hit and when you have those kind of percentages are out there. So we're already meeting and planning for that. So
well, my plan is to go to Hooper.
You're going to Hooper. That's probably a good call.
There's nobody there.
Yeah, but watch out for that one goose that comes flying by because that bird might be infected.
Yeah. So,
anyway, that's some of the things that you have to do when you're mayor.
Busy man, that's for sure.
But it's good. I enjoy it.
That's good. So, you've been doing WSU football, as you said, for 26 years. Basketball.
Same thing.
Now, one thing that is different in the last few years that is the way they have the seating for the students, where the student seating used to go down to the floor. Now it's like they got all the press there, and you know the students are sitting up a little bit further from the floor than they used to be and stuff. Do you see that as a... Is that sort of a common thing at other gyms, or is that sort of unique to us now?
To be honest with you, I haven't been in a lot of other gyms in the Pac-10.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's some of its safety concerns, but this year, the first year, we moved everything around. Well, last year, I think we had a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this year is when Bennett moved the team, too, because
right.
No longer are they to my right, they're now to my left.
Right.
Which is great, because now I can hear Bennett talk and encourage his team.
Oh, yes.
He does a lot of encouraging.
I'm sure he does.
But I'm glad it's that, not Paul Graham, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
Four of the worst years of my basketball career with Paul Graham.
Really?
I mean, you walk in, you know you're going to lose. So it's just by how much. I mean, that's a betting line. Well,
wow.
You know, because all he could do in coaching when he was here was move the ball. Well, you know, I can do that and take $200,000 too, you know?
Wow.
That's pretty good. And he was always berating his players.
Oh.
He really berated them all the time. And there wasn't any encouraging notes that he could give, you know? So you really, I mean, having Dick Bennett and Tony Bennett here has just been an incredible turnaround. Because now we actually have a shot. We beat Arizona there last year.
Yeah.
We're in the games. Well, UCLA, we weren't quite in
UCLA,
the
game. That was an anomaly, I would say, of the season.
I think we just lost the GPS sighting that day, and we were somewhere else. Something happened with the telemetry that we were probably in Oxnard. Or Cucamonga. There was a player from West Cucamonga. I didn't know that Cucamonga had a West and East, but they did.
It's obviously big enough.
But anyway, when we came back with USC and did a pretty good job, and I hope that they do very well tonight at Oregon. And
right.
I think Oregon State tonight.
And right,
yeah.
Oregon State.
Yeah. But it's fun now. It's
yeah.
Fun to have a team, fun to have crowd, and we got almost 9,000 out for one of those games here with the Huskies.
Mm-hmm.
And to beat the Huskies in basketball twice and football, it's been a great year.
Oh, yes. I got a great story about that. I've already said this on the air, but I love it so much. I'm over in Seattle. In Seattle, like proper, the city. And I'm playing some poker with a whole bunch of Huskies. We're at this guy's house. He's a Husky, and all his friends are Huskies. Some girls come in, they're Huskies.
So you're not really careful about the friends you have.
Well, it was the brother of a coworker put on the game, and he invited me to come. So I show up with my Cougar hat on, and I sit down at the table, and nobody really says anything. You know, it's all quiet and stuff. And then the two girls show up, and then one of them sees my hat, and they're like, "Ooh, Cougars." And they start going on and chipping away at it a little bit. And I continue playing my poker hand. As soon as I was done with the poker hand, I looked back at her, and I said, "I can understand that you're upset that you can't beat us on the hardwood nor the football field." And I looked back at the table, and all the guys at the table, their faces just went expressionless, and they all just sort of looked down. And I was like, "I got you guys." It was big. It was so great. And then, you know, to beat them a second time, you know, just sort of puts the, you know, it proves that the first one wasn't a fluke. You know, you can't say, oh, well, it was a bad day for the Huskies. It's like, so you had two bad days against us and we had two good days against you?
What I could see with whatever experience I have is the Husky coach, and he's been doing a good job, and he's got some good players, but Bennett out-coached him significantly in that second half. I watched how he was handling his strategies, how he's working mm-hmm. things, and Dick Bennett was the premier professional, and he definitely out-coached him.
Well, it was cool, and you know, I've been doing a lot of basketball games back in '92 when we had Benny Seltzer and we had Kelvin Sampson as our coach. I mean,
that was fun time.
Those were great times. I mean, the upper rafters, you never had plastic on them. You always had fans. Yeah. You know,
and then, I still get Chris. You know, that's the nice thing about Kelvin Sampson and Karen. They were just wonderful people to work mm-hmm. with around here. And to this day, I still get Christmas cards from Sampson every year.
Well, that's really cool.
That's sort of a nice thing, because usually you don't have that kind of a relationship with coaches. And mm-hmm. and the fact that he still wants to maintain his contacts. I could tell that right away. We used to have, they used to call third half rallies. They now have them at the Hilltop. And one time, Kelvin was there, and we were talking a little bit about it. And he said, Glenn, I want you to meet somebody. Here's my PA announcer from Montana. And he introduced me to him. And usually, you know, coaches don't do those kind of things. But I could see right there that there was a little difference in Kelvin that he even cared about. I think he coached at the Montana School of Mines or something like that. We're not talking Montana State or University right. of Montana. It was, you know, a tech kind of school.
Mm-hmm.
But he still remembered his roots, and he was grateful for that experience, and he was grateful for the time around here.
So. That's really cool. So those were great years for Cougar basketball, and then, of course, we had the last decade, which have, you know, been disappointing years.
Yeah, we're forgetting about
it. But we're building our way back out of it. We're starting to see the fan base show back up to the games. I saw the... You know, the plastic tarps have been pulled away from some of the upper seating, and people are actually sitting in them. It's more exciting to go to a game when you have a lot of fans there.
I mean, you can actually hear them react to a game. You can actually hear rumbles. I can remember when Ravling was here, and again, at that time, I just want to make sure it's very clear, because at that time we didn't have sports passes. So mm-hmm. any student with a student ID could get in free. And they stood out there and just could hardly wait to pack it. And we did have 12,000 people out. But when you could walk into Beasley and you could actually hear the rumble, and the whole place was vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
That is a neat feeling. It is a neat feeling.
And I believe that we'll be back there. If we keep the ways we're going right now, we're going to get back there.
Well, when and if, and we know Dick's going to retire one of these days.
Right.
Most people, I've actually heard him say this is the year he's going to retire. But mm-hmm. who knows? He still keeps that option. But I'll guarantee you, Tony Bennett is going to be outstanding, too.
Really?
Tony Bennett, I've worked with him in recruiting. He'll bring students over, recruits over to the communications department, because he loves our Friday newscast and loves to watch us go through the agony of people doing news on the air and making mistakes. And he brings recruits, and that's one of his highlights. Now we're coaching, and he's not coaching, you know. So, and the weather board, he likes the green weather board, and so he'll bring recruits there. He may not even major in communications, but it's just working with the guy. And he called me right after right before the Gonzaga game, so I could meet somebody on that Friday
mm-hmm.
who was interested. And matter of fact, the guy did transfer over here, but he's a heck of a recruiter, and we're again very lucky to have him. Jim Sturk, the athletic director, has done an outstanding job getting coaches like that.
Well, that's great, and. You know, we got more basketball to go, and of course, wasn't the greatest of football seasons for us. There was a lot of missed opportunities, left a lot of wins on the field. But I believe this year we're going to turn that around, and we're going to have a great season.
That's the one thing about Cougars: we are optimistics. We're not, you know, not like some of these teams. They may lose two games and they become pessimists. We always know there's hope.
Yes,
because if we can play through the snowball, we can play through agony, mm-hmm. all those other kinds of things that we deal with. We're Cougars.
Exactly.
We can do it.
Exactly. So, speaking of we can do it, how is it the city can do it?
We can do it.
We can do it.
We can do it.
Okay, so Glenn, here's the meat and potatoes, why we're here now.
Okay.
We got it.
So, that's the time I was about ready to leave now, right? Just kidding.
Okay, so I got one question that I'll let you answer later on, but I just want to... make sure we get it in before you leave.
Okay.
But the first thing I'd like to talk about is you've been soliciting from the citizens, from city workers, goals for the city of Pullman. And I'm sort of curious, Tom and I were both wondering what kind of goals are being seen coming in, and what kind of goals do you have personally?
Well, first of all, we do this every year. It's a great process, even with a previous mayor, previous people around here. We've always solicited goals from the public. This year, we've gotten quite an outpouring. Mm-hmm. Some of them from certain political spectrums, certain things they want to have accomplished. Now, what we generally do is we meet together, and this will happen in March, where the city council and the mayor and our couple of department heads will sit down, and we'll go through every one of those goals. They've already had their booklet. They can take a look at all the different goals. I'm not going to talk about all the ones, but, I mean, some of them, you know, basically you want to have peace in the Middle East. Now, there's some things that you can do as a mayor, but, you know, bringing peace to the Middle East is probably a little high on my, you know, it's a little on the tough scale in the first place. It's like trying to understand women sometimes. It becomes sometimes very difficult. But there are some goals there that obviously we all take a look at. And the overall goal for us is to keep it in a manageable number. That's like around 35. So, I mean, we're probably at the neighborhood of maybe four, I would say, maybe a couple of hundred different goals that have come in. Some of them say, you know, we want to make sure you bring in more retail. Well, that obviously, we're certainly not standing in the way of any retail. We're trying to encourage that as much as we possibly can, because when you take a look at the, and this sort of ties in with one of my goals, couple things I've learned. I'm in my third year as mayor. You cannot accomplish a lot of things in the first year, second year, third year. It takes a while to get these things done.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to have a friendly face on business. And that is true from the council. It's true from the mayor. It's true from the administration. So we have done our best to try and encourage as much business to come to the city of Pullman, because we need the retail sales tax. There's mm-hmm. no question in my mind we need that, especially when you look at the property tax area and then you look at the retail. I think we're out of a dollar that comes into the city. It's around 24 cents for retail sales tax, and that's low. When you look at other cities in the state, that figure is in the neighborhood of around 40% or more, or 30%. Now, a couple of things can help that. We were over in Olympia the latter part of January, meeting with our legislators, as we always do every year, and we meet with them. I've got to say a couple of things. Our legislators from this area do a really good job of keeping in contact with us. Mark Schessler, David Burein, you know, Don Cox, they do a great job of keeping communication. We'll get phone calls. They have my cell phone number. If they need an illustration of some bill that's being considered, how will this impact your city, mm-hmm. we get that information back to them right away. So one of the things that we were pushing was a streamlined sales and use tax. Now, I noticed in the spokesman review this morning, that's coming along. Now, what that does for a city like this, we have so many internet sales that up to at least the existing law is that if you sell a product and you're over in Tacoma and it's mailed to Pullman, the place that mails that or the warehouse where that's at gets the sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
We don't in Pullman.
Okay.
So the streamlined sales tax creates, it's a federal law primarily, and it works its way down to the state, and the states have to ratify it. And I think the latest number I've heard is around 20 states have ratified it. And we have been working through our Association of Washington Cities to try and mitigate. So those people that are really dependent on those sales tax, let's say Tacoma,
mm-hmm.
where they might miss the tax in the future, there's mitigating money to help tie that over with Tacoma. Where now, where that post office box is or where that zip code is, now we will get that sales tax. Now that makes a good impact for the city of Pullman, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of people that do a lot of internet and a lot of sales. I've seen my credit card. My wife is doing a really good job keeping the economy going. We're supporting, you know. But now at least we'll get that sales tax, if that's
mm-hmm.
the word. So the Senate passed it unanimously in Olympia. And now the House is considering that. And then the governor has already given us her assurance that she will sign that. So then we'll be another state that's ratified it. Now it can move along the way. And we probably won't see any impact this year, obviously, but maybe the latter part of 2007 and definitely by 2008, we should see a little difference there. The other thing is getting retail in the community. We have, Lane Rollins and I actually signed about 300 letters a couple of years ago that went out to different developers saying, mm-hmm. you know, this is a great community. I mean, let's face it, we're up to about 27,000 people right now, 26,590 if you want to be exact. But anyway, it's a great area for retail,
mm-hmm.
and we have a pent-up market here. This past summer, my wife and I had a chance to be up in Alaska, and we did a tour. And some of those businesses in Alaska only operate basically from May until September, mm-hmm. and then it starts getting cold. And then people that somehow the tourists just don't want to come there when it's, you know, blustery cold.
Amazing.
But I don't understand that. Because I have been up in Alaska in spring break, and it was 17 below and minus 37 wind chill factor when I visited my son in Barrow, Alaska, where he's the assistant principal up there. Now, two weeks ago, they had a cold day. They actually called it a cold day, and they didn't even have school because it was minus 79 wind chill.
Wow.
Minus 59 actual, and that was the second coldest day in the history of Barrow, Alaska.
Amazing.
And so they said, nope. You know, you'd freeze everything. He's actually told me one time that he went out and was about 40 below or 50 below, and if you didn't have a scarf over your nose, you was just like your lungs were going to crack. It was just that cold kind of thing. So,
crazy.
We know what cold's like. The point
is,
notice how the professor always gets back to the point. Some do.
Some do.
That in 5 months, they can survive up in Alaska and have all these different stores for mm-hmm. tourists. Well, here in Pullman, we only have 3 months of downtime.
Right.
Really. It's just the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of, okay, they've got 7 months of downtime, and yet they can make it. I don't see, and people always have used that excuse. Well, you know, summers people go. Well, the summer session here in Pullman and also in Moscow, growing.
It's huge
it's
anymore.
5,000-6,000 people. It's not as bad as it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. So that's another thing we have to convey in a message, that, hey, this is a year-round place. It's not. They don't all pick up and leave and take their wallets with them. There are people here that like to have services, too.
Yeah.
So we are seeing some, you know, encouraging signs in that regard. And we, who knows what the future is going to bring, but that's one thing that we're trying to do is encourage more retail sales tax to get that number up.
Mm-hmm.
Because regardless, you know, of what sales tax revenue picture is, the property tax revenue picture, the demands on the city are still there. I mean, we still have to, of the actual dollar in terms of what we spend, it's 35 cents go to police protection of that dollar, 24 cents to fire. And then you start having other things. Well, that's your 55% of your budget right there, just taking care of the basic public services.
Right.
We're very lucky in this community. We have paramedic service 24 hours a day. We have great firefighters and great reserve firefighters, I might add.
Thank you, Glenn.
You have your pager on right at the moment. mine's on and nothing's gone off at the moment. But, you know, we have a great fire department, great police department. One of the things that I always try and talk to my students about is, you know, they can come with preconceived notions of police officers where they've lived, but it's different here. I mean, we have a highly educated police force.
Mm-hmm.
We've had officers with master's degrees, and we have people on there right now that are authors of books. You know, it's a little different here in Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of services that are demanded of us, and then you have, in addition to that, now you're facing some of the things dealing with the environmental protection, the Department of Ecology. They have a rule that we're all trying to conform with the ambient stream temperature downstream from a water treatment plant in which it should maintain a certain cool temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're calling the ice cube, you know, factor. We have to pour ice cubes out there to keep the salmon alive. And believe me, if you can find a salmon coming up that Palouse River, you know,
are there anything?
Number one, I'm not going to eat it.
Is there anything living in that river?
Oh, yeah, I've seen some things. If you go to Swilly's.
Three eyes?
Well, there could be some strange things there, but you look. I've been around Swilly's and looking at the stream right there, and I've actually seen a school of, you know, obviously dumb students because, you know, they're just, you know, because what do you want to do? I mean, there's a lot of better streams out there than the Palouse River.
Yeah.
But, again, a lot of things that are imposed upon us over here in Pullman, we're imposed on the west side.
Right.
I believe it. Oh, well, it's the state of Washington, so everything's exactly the same.
It's not.
You know, and we have other things we have to deal with. During the summer, that stream is practically nothing.
Right.
And then they start talking about, you know, stream temperatures. So, but anyway, we're trying to expand our water treatment plant right now. We're not talking, that's not a $1,000 project. That's millions. You know, like one estimate I saw for one portion of the thing was about $9 million, another one's about $12
million.
Wow. But Mark Workman's our public works director, and he's done an incredible job as our director. We have set aside reserve funds because we knew 5 years down the road that we were going to have to do this. We're going to have to expand here. We're going to have to create these new protection devices in the river and also with the water treatment plant. So we've been planning for it. And then there's not as much in terms of money available to the cities that there used to be from the federal government. You could look at one of the expressions we use, that Lewiston, I think, got for one of their water treatment plants about 90% from the federal government, 10% local match, which, you know, it's great. But now today, we don't get anything from the federal government. Hmm. We do quite well here, which is another goal. So you notice how I bring it back there, Scott. and that's getting water to the airport. The airport in this area is very important to all of us. And there, matter of fact, I hear a plane coming in right now. And yep. As a matter of fact, it's right on time. Or at least it's very close. It's horizon. It's close. You know, as long as they find the airport, that's all we care. The airport is important. And mm-hmm. one of our concerns is getting water to the airport, primarily for fire flow protection. Now, we're looking at tanks, huge water tanks, because one of the things that's kept the growth down is the fact we don't have fire flow. And so when we have interstate aviation expanding, mm-hmm. we've had to come up with special ways to protect the planes inside because, again, you have to run water tanks out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we are so grateful to have Schweitzer Engineering, SEL, in this community.
Yes.
Just the other day we had 168 going to be hired here mm-hmm. in Pullman and about 220 worldwide. SEL is a tremendous company. And we're just grateful to have them here and the way they're expanding. Well, I'm talking to Ed Schweitzer. I said, okay, when's your third plane coming in? And it's going to be the 1st of March. We'll have 3 corporate jets out for SEL.
Wow.
And, when they can get on board and be in New York City in 3.5 hours from Pullman, or they go internationally in some of their flights, that's important. Bennett Lumber is also out there. We have a lot more corporate jets and corporate planes at that airport than we ever used to. And now with Barnes & Noble, the bookie, Barnes & Noble has their own corporate jet that comes in. The largest plane that has landed there was Paul Allen, the second richest man in the world, who was speaking to the commencement exercise a while back. Mm-hmm. He flew in a 757.
Wow.
Now, it was just him and a few friends, and when you're rich like that, you can say, hey, what the heck about the gas bill, and just fly that plane in. They did. The good news about that, he did buy locally,
yeah?
Because I want you to know this. He was at the president's house, and he said, you know, I remember my time as a kid, and here as a student, and I would really like to have a Cougar Country burger again.
That's awesome.
He borrowed the president's car, went down to Cougar Country. Here, the second richest man in the world getting a Cub burger or a deluxe burger. Don't know exactly which one. But he knew that fry sauce, and he wanted those, Cougar Country is a great place.
Now, it is.
This is a non-commercial station, right? So that was a non-commercial plug. I just want to make sure you know that. But, I mean, he does. So, I mean, you have a lot of great memories, and you talk to students, and they like to come back like that. But the airport, getting back, is a great place, and we're just trying to get money enough, about $4 million, to try and get fire flow out there.
Okay.
Because that also will help you expand. When you start looking at the airport, most of the projects we've been doing are covered by the federal government by about 95%.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been spending, I think right now, we're in the last 4 or 5 years, when you add those two together, we're close to about $10 million on safety zones for the airport,
mm-hmm.
different other areas. We now have approval by the FAA. I've been speaking to the FFA lately, so I want to make sure I get the FAA correctly. That will allow us to have the Q400 planes. That's the ones, the about 70-passenger planes that arise and fly. It's
okay.
A more economical airplane. It's a very comfortable plane, and we flew it in here all the time. And then the FAA decided they would tie up some more safety factors. So now we've taken care of that problem. So whenever the Horizon Airlines gets back the Q400 and they have them on order,
mm-hmm.
then that plane will be able to land here. This year, it's been terrific. We've had both the University of Idaho and WSU flying out of here for football games, the whole football team.
Wow.
They were going on the Airbus 320
mm-hmm.
flying out of here, and they had a great time. There's only one time in the entire football season they couldn't land here, and that was a fog situation. Mm-hmm. They landed at Lewiston.
Wow.
But they got all the planes in and out and on the Airbus. And 2 years ago, when we went over to Seattle to play the game, I got to fly with the team on the Airbus.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, normally, and I've been with the team when they went to Arizona, and I've been mm-hmm. to Notre Dame. I was very lucky. That never happened until Jim Sturt came on board, where he actually invited the PA announcer to actually go with the team. That's the first time it ever happened in all those years.
Wow.
But I got to fly on that Airbus. And usually, the football players all sit in the back of the plane, and the guests sit in the front.
Mm-hmm.
When you're flying out of Pullman, they were very careful. They called you up like about a week and said, Glenn, how much do you weigh? Oh, okay. So I told them. And I didn't, you know, fudge on it. I didn't want to make mm-hmm. sure it was very accurate. So when you sit on the plane, now you have a lineman here and a lineman here on both sides of the aisle. So they balance the plane much better. So I knew where I sat, you know. Oh, you're getting the receiving core. Okay, good. We'll balance that one out a little bit. But that's one of the things they did do a little bit differently in flying out. But, I mean, you're in Seattle in less than 40 minutes.
Right.
So you come right to the airport. They get you through security beautifully,
mm-hmm.
much better than Spokane or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're on the plane. They've already loaded the thing, and off they go.
Yeah.
Most people don't
know. Up and down.
Yeah, most people don't even know that most of the equipment is not even on the plane. I mean, they have a trailer.
Oh.
And there are people actually work for Pratt Mayflower that drive it to every game.
Right.
And they take off, like, on a Wednesday before the game and head off to, whether it's Nebraska or elsewhere, to haul all the equipment the teams need.
Right.
And most of the teams do that.
So I know we're really super short on time with you.
We're still okay for about another 4 or 5 more minutes.
4 or 5 more minutes. Okay. So one of my questions for you, and I got two now. I came up with another one.
Okay.
One of them is, Bishop Boulevard has been, we've read about it a lot of times, that's been the place for growth in Pullman. But as you drive Bishop Boulevard today, it's definitely a lot more filled up than it was 10 years ago. So the point is, we're running out of space. What is Pullman's next location for growth?
That's a really good question, and part of our comprehensive plan, and that comprehensive plan goes back to the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And when people say, oh, you put in a quick zone change to accommodate, you know, large manufacturing or whatever else on that road, I mean, that's all been documented, public hearings and everything else. And so there's been revisions in 92 and comprehensive plan. So all that commercial zone is all on Bishop Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people are also looking down Grand Avenue. And there's some other areas on the way to, like, Jess Ford.
Okay, that's
so there's some area side. There. There's some houses in that regard. There's some farmland out there.
Mm-hmm.
That also is one of the areas that's being considered. There's also a proposed South Bypass. Again, there's no money to do it, but the South Bypass would sort of go, like, from New Chem Place
mm-hmm.
over to connect sort of to Johnson Road. I've heard a lot of different variations
sure.
on that. Moscow Pullman Road to get us to the new 270. So there could be commercial development there.
Yeah.
The other good news is with Schweitzer Engineering, the 92 acres they have, they've got a multi-zone area up there
mm-hmm.
to have about residential. But they're building so much that there's certainly potential on the north end of town
yeah.
to have additional retail space.
Well,
and that's one of the things that Schweitzer has on their plans is mm-hmm. to try and market it the best way they can to bring in some additional retail in there for the north area, which would be great.
So has there been any talk of annexing north of the city, I say up to like the Albion Road, Wheeling Road right in there?
That is part of our
lot
of call urban growth area.
Okay.
And there's that's already on the plan. And you mentioned Dr. Fairbanks is trying to annex.
Right.
And that's already been partially approved. So he wants to bring that in. The other problem when you start dealing with the north area, the state has bought up a lot of property for their so-called North Bypass.
Yes.
And they also have that is basically a zone that you can't do anything with because it's their, you know, their right-of-way that
sure.
they bought up. We've been talking to the state. Matter of fact, there is a committee that deals with the state transportation department that involves the county, the port, the city. And they've been getting together to see if there's ways that we could realign that, we could do land swaps so we wouldn't have this huge sort of island
mm-hmm.
between where people want to annex to the city. Can we cross it, for example, with sewer and water if there's a right-of-way there? Where's the most logical place to have, if this North Bypass ever happens, and the state has already told us there is absolutely no money, it would never happen. It wouldn't happen in, you know, I don't even know when, but it's not even in the next 50-year plan because there's no money for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe if the state became very rich, you know, they could probably do something eventually.
Sure.
But in the meantime, we have to get around that as far as annexing, as far as bringing in water and sewer to the properties that have been annexed. So that's another concern that we're working our way through.
Sure.
So we are meeting about it. The county and the city have talks at least about every quarter. We call it the JPAC, the Joint Planning Commission. We'll have a meeting that we'll sit down together in another month or so. And one of our concerns, of course, from the city is if the county continues to put little small residential areas
right
in our urban growth area, now you've just shut off any ability to annex.
Right.
And we don't want them tying a noose around our neck because this city is, well, if you look at the tax dollar, we give an awful lot to the county. And if they get about 11 cents of property tax from Pullman. And when you listen to the auditor from Whitman County, he says Pullman is the driving force in the county. So we know that. So why would it be logical for people then to put a noose around you and not allow you to expand when there's need for it? So that's one of our concerns that we do address. And now Whitman County has their great plan for the Whitman County corridor, and they've zoned appropriately for it. I would love to have all that development, obviously, in the city of Pullman, so we could get that.
Can't we just annex 270 real quick?
You can't do a lot of spot annexing, but we'd sure love to do that. But then we'd have to supply them with water, and sewer, and that's $15 million, which we don't have.
But it's better to have it in
It's better to have it in the state of Washington and Whitman County than across that border. So from those standpoints, yes, I would like to have it number one in Pullman, but the second thing, I'm glad it's at least in Whitman County.
Right, and then someday the city might be growing enough that we could start annexing Airport Row, 270,
and we're out there as far as Sig Jorstead's, you know, the Siggy Dome. That's as far as the
city goes. True. So now, I just sort of a fun question. This is something I asked last week on the show. We got a couple people to give us the answer to it. I'm giving you right now $500 cash, and the only stipulation is you must spend it. You can't put it in your savings account. What are you going to buy?
$500?
Yeah. Anything you want.
I do a pretty systematic job of going out and buying things. I just don't go out and buy things, you know. But, I say some things in City Hall that we probably could use a new printer.
Okay,
$500. I'm gonna try and think of what I can do for $500. You will give me a lot. If you give me $14 million, I could get water all kinds of places. You know,
well, for
we could be growing. Man. Just give me some money.
So for $500, you get. I mean, it's your own money. It's not the city's money.
Oh, okay.
So
I have given money back to the city. I get my mayor's check, which isn't a lot. But you know, I'll donate to different causes within the city. I bought a bicycle for the police department because they didn't have one and they didn't have it in the budget, but they needed one, and I felt it was a donation. Basically giving back to the city. Because I've served on so many volunteer boards over the years that I just basically didn't expect a lot of money.
Right.
That's what I got.
So your $500, you got any? I mean, you go on a spending spree. You can buy the thing that you've been wanting to buy, you didn't really want to spend the money on, anything at all.
Well, it might be something for my computer. It might be something for, you know, I have a nice Sprint phone with my PDA.
Oh, okay.
I put some neat programming on there later, and I can now see all the news that's going on in the country. I can get radar pictures on it. Oh, man, that's pretty cool.
So you're going to buy something for your computer?
I might buy something electronic.
Okay.
I'm not going to commit yet. I have to find I have to find a good deal. I have to shop around. I'm going to have to go on the internet.
Oh, okay. So I guess, you know, so the question is that where would you shop around? Where would you go to look for it?
Well, first, I will always go to Pullman.
Of course.
That's number one on the list.
So which, yeah.
So we'll obviously check out Shopko, Rite Aid. We'd also check out some other stores here in town.
Radio
Pullman
Shack.
Appliance. I might find something at Pullman that I might want.
Radio
Shack. There's a lot of good electronics at Radio Shack.
There is.
But the good thing is that I don't really have to cross the border to buy things. I can do it right here in my own hometown, knowing full well that we get the sales tax.
Yeah. We had somebody say that they wanted to buy a bathtub for $500. A bathtub.
Okay.
They had no clue where to go to get a bathtub, though, for $500.
Well, we used to have Penguin Plumbing.
Right.
Unfortunately, they picked up their Penguin and left.
God, that was bad.
Well, the Penguin, you know, it gets pretty old after a while. But it gets warm during the summer. That Penguin was getting, you know, pretty well beat. So.
Yeah. So anyway.
But we do have some very good plumbing stores here in town.
Yes.
And if you go to Cormson's, you go to all kinds. There's all kinds of plumbing supplies that would have that.
Do they have a retail outlet, or do you have to go and buy it?
They would deliver it right to your home and install it.
Right, but I mean, can you go to do they have showrooms where you can actually go in and look around, or would you have to look in the magazine and they order it and bring it in?
I honestly don't know.
Okay. I don't know either. I was just asking.
Certainly
I know we do have plumbing places in town. You're right. So, anyway, we're definitely out of your time and everything like that. I appreciate you coming on the show. And a quick yes or no question. Is the city of Pullman looking to enact any kind of big box ordinance?
It's not on the agenda at this point.
Very good. Glad to hear it, Glenn. Once again, thank you for coming in. I really appreciated the time with you, and I hope that you have a great day.
Thank you, and you ought to say thanks to Tom, who's running the board here, too. He's been really busy.
Tom does a great job over there in booth, too, and I really appreciate his help. Anyway, we're going to go to the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. So, Tom, does that song remind you of anything?
Crisp fall afternoons in Martin Stadium, maybe.
Yeah, that, and then, of course, most recently our win over USC in basketball was always a good one as well.
Which, of course, I predicted last week. I said it was a very winnable game, and the Cougs went out and won it, so I thought it was great.
Oh, it was great. It was great. And Cougars are on tap for Oregon State tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
7 p.m. Yep, down in Corvallis.
Mm-hmm.
Women's are going to be playing Oregon State at 7 p.m. here in Pullman, so here's an opportunity to come and watch some basketball take place here. Baseball, they're over in Hawaii now. They actually won their tournament that I was talking about last weekend down in, South Carolina?
Yeah, they're getting some frequent flyer miles, South Carolina, now they're in Hawaii, so.
Yeah, and they took the tournament down there on good pitching and everything, according to the Evergreen, so that's pretty exciting. Maybe we'll have we're going to have a turnaround basketball team, turnaround baseball team.
Yes.
You know, as Glenn was saying, it sounds like, we talked about, would Tony Bennett be able to do what his dad is doing now? You know, does it necessarily transfer from one generation to the next? Just because dad is, does it mean son is?
Right.
You know, and Glenn seems to be very optimistic that Tony Bennett is the real deal.
Yes.
So it'll be fun to see. I don't want to push Dick out the door.
No.
I'd like to see him finish at least another year.
Sure.
Finish what he started. But it will be good to, I guess it'll be exciting to see how Bennett does, or Tony does.
Yes.
So, on top of the baseball, they're going to be, like I said, they're tonight, 5 o'clock, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, they're playing Hawaii, and then again on Sunday at 2 o'clock. Also, we got men's basketball at Oregon in Eugene, 1 p.m. on Saturday, so that should be a good one to at least listen to on TV, or listen to on the radio. So, anyway, let me ask you a question here.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you up on your current events?
Yes, I am.
You are.
I think so.
Okay. I'm going to give you two words.
Okay.
Well, technically four. But we'll count it as two concepts. How about that? I'll give you two concepts.
Tell me
how it is that these two concepts fit together.
Okay.
Gonzaga basketball.
Okay.
Brokeback Mountain. How do they fit together?
Well, they fit together because I guess the students in the, what do they call that, the kennel, Gonzaga, started chanting Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain to the opposing
teams, which, I'm not quite sure what the significance of that is.
Oh, okay. I can tell you, though.
Okay.
If you want to hear it. No? Yes?
Please.
I'd love
to hear it. I mean,
well, we can keep everybody in suspense.
I understand some
make
obvious
you do your
references
that.
That maybe I can't quite get into on the radio, but please explain where this came from.
Okay, there is a picture from St. Mary's, one of the St. Mary's basketball players was in a picture that was supposedly it was a made-up picture, sort of a posed or a whatever. Anyway, he was in an embrace and sort of getting ready to kiss a man.
I see.
Lip-to-lip contact.
Gotcha.
And they weren't really kissing in the picture. They were just, really close to one another. It made it appear that they were going to. So the picture got circulated, and the Gonzaga fans decided that the Brokeback Mountain was the way to talk about that.
Yes. Well, I know that the Jesuit fathers up there had decided that it wouldn't be appropriate for the Stanford game, so they said there were going to be no Brokeback Mountain cheers during the Stanford game, and I guess the student body complied with that. So
yeah, they They are complying with it. And, you know, it's...
I mean, I don't know what relevance it would have to another team other than St. Mary's, right?
Right. And, you know, it's funny, too, because they had... you know, some of the fans were bringing up a good point. It's like, you know what? Some of the opposing fans say so much worse to our team. You know, I guess you could take, you could say, well, then take the high road. You know, don't say anything like that. Take the high road about it and everything else like that. So, did you get a chance to watch the USC game, Tom?
I did. I watched the USC game, and I thought it was great. Actually, my wife and my son both got a chance to go to the USC game. My son, if you were at the game on Saturday at halftime, they had a couple of teams from the Pullman Parks and Rec played kind of a little demonstration game during halftime, and my son was one of the players in that game. So he was quite excited to be out there on field court.
Was he white or blue?
You know, I don't know. I wasn't at the game, but their team, I don't think he missed a few shots, I guess. So
was he blonde haired kid?
A little blonde haired kid. Yeah.
And, okay.
So he missed a few shots, but I guess he said he got some steals and everything. So
yeah, I remember that.
It's great. He really enjoys it. They have kind of a good program at the Parks and Rec for basketball. So he really gets a kick out of that. So it was a lot of fun for him to be able to do that. But yeah, so I had to stay home with the baby, and my wife went to the game, and so I watched it on Fox Sports Northwest, and it was a great game. You know, they kind of got off to the, you know, the started off like, you know, oh my gosh, here we go again. But I think the team, you know, really turned it around at halftime, and I think the intensity was there. And you know, Cal Gill had a great game, I thought, and I thought Aaron Baines had a great game too. So you know, you know, Josh Akani got it going. So it was a good game, a good game to build on for the future, I think, for the Cougs.
Very cool. Well, we have a caller who wanted to talk about Brokeback Mountain. Caller, are you on the air?
Okay.
This is the PES?
Yeah. Actually, you know, the homophobia that runs rampant in sports is just, you know, it's ridiculous when you try and taunt the other team with calling them fags or insinuating that they're fags or things of that nature. I just think that it's ridiculous, and promoting it and giving it, like, not saying that it's something that should be discouraged and laughing at it is, you know, it's just, it's hate, and it's wrong.
Okay, so don't you think there's a lot of other chants that happen that are pretty hateful and probably equally as wrong, but they don't get the coverage because it's not dealing with homosexuality?
Yeah, I think that there are plenty of chants that deal with calling people, you know, wussies, or that they're of a feminine quality, and I think all of that runs rampant in sports, and it's just wrong. It's hateful, and it shouldn't be there. And to promote it is just saying it's condoning it, and it promotes it and perpetuates it.
So, how would you like to? How can you see anybody fixing that problem?
Well, the Jesuits there at the Gonzaga University say, "Don't do it, so you don't do it."
So, did they do the right thing?
Well, you know, I'm a real proponent of being able to do and say whatever the heck you want to do and
sure.
say.
Okay.
You know, and any kind of, you know, prohibitions on free speech and things of that nature, I think, you know, they shouldn't be there. But to promote it and to laugh at it and to not point out that it's, you know, it's hate, you know, as far as saying don't do it, I can't say that. You know, if people want to do it, if they want to say Brokeback Mountain, insinuate that people are fags, they're a feminine quality, they can't play basketball because they're fags, blah, 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 that's fine. Say it. But people who are educated, who know better, should be able to point that out and say, that's not true.
Okay,
and
so
that they're promoted is wrong.
Okay, so let me ask you a question real quick. You keep on saying the word fag when you're talking about homosexuals.
Yep.
Don't you think that's probably worse than saying Brokeback Mountain?
Fag, Brokeback Mountain, whatever.
Well,
words are words. You know.
But I guess what I'm getting at is
that people are fags.
Using that word though is so derogatory. I mean,
well,
I'm just saying. I mean, I would think that
saying Brokeback Mountain is derogatory.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean,
and that's why I'm using the word fag.
Okay, yeah.
That's what it means. That's what they're saying. You know, you can't just go out there and say fag, but you can say Brokeback Mountain.
Well, that's the thing, is that saying Brokeback Mountain was very bad.
Yeah,
saying Brokeback Mountain, the point of it was to insinuate that the person was homosexual.
Right.
Now, what I'm saying, though, is that in the discussion of this today, your use of it might seem that you're on one hand saying it was bad to be saying this because you were insinuating that the person was homosexual, and that's a bad thing, but at the same time, you're using the tip of the worst of the worst words to describe homosexuality.
Because I'm making a point.
I'm sort of wondering if you're losing your point by using that word so loosely. I mean, I think I see what you're doing in some ways. You're making people uncomfortable by continuously saying the word.
Right.
But at the same time, is that fixing anything? I mean, is somebody who's listening to the radio station right now, turning it on, hearing you say that word, all of a sudden going, whoa, what is this guy talking about? What a jerk. What a homophobe.
Well,
I mean, they're going to think that about you because you're saying it.
The way people take what I say, I can't predict. And my intent is not to insult people. It's just to show the use Brokeback Mountain. It's like saying faggot. It's the same thing.
Okay, and so
that's my point. And if people want to be offended and whatever, then, you know, take it that way. I can't...
Well, obviously, you are offended by it. So, you know, I mean, that's why you're talking about that right now. But, you know...
And I just want to bring that point across that simply because you're not saying it outright, it's just as bad as saying the word faggot.
Okay, I think I can understand what you're saying. The implication of the word is just as bad as using the word itself.
Yeah, and the feelings behind it, and the intent.
But now, here's the question, though. Do you think that the intent of the Gonzaga University fans was the same as, say, the intent of somebody who would tie somebody else to a fence post and pistol whip them to death? Do you think that they have the same... do you think that calling them both equally homophobes is proper and fair? Or do you think... how do you feel about that?
The intent of chanting Brokeback Mountain is to insinuate that the male players have a feminine quality to them.
Well, you know why,
bags,
but you know why they were chanting that, though, don't you? You know why they were chanting it. They weren't chanting it just because. They were chanting it because one of the players from St. Mary's who was on the court had a picture of him and another guy in an embrace getting ready to kiss.
And does that really matter?
So the point is that they weren't doing it because they were trying to claim that the team wasn't feminine. They were going on with the point that, hey, there is one on the court. You know, granted, the understanding
really
is that picture wasn't real.
Does that really matter? Do you sit there and chant heterosexual? You don't.
I'm sure most people don't. You're right.
There's absolutely no reason to chant that unless you're saying that they're fags and they shouldn't or can't be playing basketball. They are inferior players because they're faggots.
Okay.
They were kissing a man.
So we need
really kissing a man. What relevance?
So do we need to stop
basketball game?
Do we need to stop
Absolutely.
Chanting? Do we need to stop chanting you when somebody gets a foul? And should we stop chanting airball when somebody misses?
Because everything to do with the basketball game.
No, but if you're chanting airball, if you're chanting airball, the poor guy can't even make a basket. He's too limp-wristed to shoot a ball 10 feet through the air and hit the rim. He missed it 100%. That's just, you're essentially saying that guy is too weak to play basketball.
That has to do with the you know, if you're saying faggot and calling the guy a faggot on the court, that's hate speech, and it doesn't play any part in sports. But Brokeback Mountain and the guy kissing another guy or merely am kissing another guy has absolutely nothing to do with basketball or the game at hand. They're just bringing that out to say that homosexuals should not be playing basketball or are inferior basketball players. That has nothing to do with the guy's performance on the court. It has nothing to do with the game at
hand. Now, let me ask. I mean, it would seem to me you're almost making an argument against yourself, because you're saying that by saying the word Brokeback Mountain, you're inferring, A, that the person is gay, and B, that because the person is gay, they're bad at playing basketball. And you weren't making that determination because the person is gay. And now here's the thing. Here's the thing. Is that all you could be doing is taunting the person about being gay, but that doesn't mean anything about his skills as a basketball player, but you're saying it does.
Then why would you do that?
So that would be your homophobicness showing through.
Why would you say Brokeback Mountain? What's the reasoning behind that? You tell me.
The reasoning behind it is because you're trying to get under the person's skin and in their head, because they know they were posing for a fake picture and they got around. And pardon me, I'm having a hard time here because excuse me. Excuse me, I got a cough right now, but anyway.
Go for it.
Sorry about that. Anyway.
Sounds good on the air.
I know, it's bad. I'm trying not to do this right now, but as you can hear.
Up on the microphone there, man.
So anyway, the problem is, the thing is, the fans are doing that to get under the player's skin, to get in their head, to make them play poor basketball. What you're saying is that they're inferring that because he's gay, he can't play. Because he's gay, he can't play. That would be a good chant. Maybe they should try that next time. Aw, shucks, he hung up on us. Even though the phone went down. Anyway, because he's gay, he can't play. Maybe that's the chant they should have said, if that's what this guy is saying is correct. But no, the thing was, the fans were getting under his skin and trying to make him uncomfortable on the court, which would make him play worse.
Right.
And I think that by saying what this guy was saying, insofar as because they said Brokeback Mountain, they were assuming he was a fag, as he put it. And because they're gay, they can't play basketball. And he's making that distinction from can't play basketball because he's gay, and the fans never did that. That guy made that distinction just now. That's homophobic to me. The fans were just getting under the guy's skin and trying to make him feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't really think it was hate speech. I don't think they were trying to make a political statement per se about gays or anything like that. It may have showed some immaturity on the part of the students. It perhaps was not the most politically correct thing to say, but you know, these are college students, and like you said, they were just trying to get into the opposition's head. You know, the Gonzaga fans have a reputation for kind of being rowdy and loud and things like that. And so, yeah, it probably, like I said, was immature, and it probably wasn't the greatest thing to say. But they were told not to say it, of course, because of all the bad publicity that came out of it. But I certainly don't think it rises to the level of a hate crime or any kind of conspiracy by the students.
What's interesting about the whole thing is the fact that the school went to the students and said, you're not going to say that anymore. And how often do we hear people arguing that, oh, he's religious, therefore he hates gay people, and on and on and on and on.
Right.
And here's a school, a religious school, coming to the students saying, no, don't be saying that about these people.
Right.
And you got to say, well, obviously, this religious group is not nearly as bad as some would make them out to be, because they're actually coming down and saying, hey, we're not going to be going there.
Right. So. Sure. Yeah, I think it's, you know, probably a lot made out of, you know, kind of a mountain out of a molehill kind of thing. So,
yeah, the 12th man was sort of another situation like that. It's like, you know, it had been, you know, granted, the Brokeback Mountain was probably the first time they did it, but it's like all of a sudden it becomes a national story once the team becomes good.
Right, right.
You know, if that was happening at some 2-bit college, nobody would have known about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a point. I think that the behavior in sports events these days is probably getting a lot worse than, say, it was 30 or 40 years ago, especially you look at the NBA and some of the incidents that have taken place at NBA games, you know, where the fans have gotten into fights with the players and, you know, they curse at the players and things like that. And, you know, in football to a certain degree, I guess some of the behavior of the fans has gotten bad over the years. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you can make a case for that and say that in general, society is probably a little bit less polite and a little more vulgar than it was. I'm sure, like, watching a basketball game back in the 50s, you know, the fans were probably very polite, applauded. I'm sure there wasn't even any taunting so much of the other team, you know, like you were saying with the you and whatever. They probably didn't even do that. But, yeah, in this case, though, I think it's just probably reflective of just a bunch of fans that are, you know, really behind their team and just thought that would be a funny thing to do to try to get into the heads of the other players. So,
sorry about that.
Okay.
So anyway, why don't we see here? We've talked to Glenn Johnson. We've been promising that for a while now. We've also been promising one other thing, and that's been to talk about the State of the Union address.
Yes,
it was so long ago.
I know.
I'm sure some people forgot that it even happened, or
like, what
was
there a State of the Union?
State of the Union. What are you talking about? Last year? I don't remember that. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and shift some gears, and we will get into the State of the Union after this After this non-commercial break.
Non-commercial break, yes.
Yes, after this non-commercial break, you're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM.
Okay, kids, gather around. It's story time. Once upon a time, there was a rat and a turtle.
Sit in the caves of flat in anticipation. Dreaming, dreaming, hearts beating in harmony. Dreaming, the caves and the caves are feeling an illumination. The trees and sounds fly by and the wind is loud as melody. In search of an apple pie. Legs run out of power. Rest and think of an hour. Till the turtle lets out a cry. With a smile on his face, in the river is waste and dries. Refreshing dew. Out of flower and apples, the apple pie staples. They abandon the stocky shoes into the tricycle now. They leave from the river in one bound. Screaming. Markets downtown will do for Krispy Kreme from the fresh hot sweet apple juice. People on the sidewalks, markets are inside. The air is teasing, the smell is freezing, fine out of the light. Yeah.
Listening to the award-winning The PES on KCUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Boogie Mall. Reach us on the phone at 509-335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, or you can reach our website at www.thepes.com. We have some message boards on there if you want to say anything or leave a message. You can go ahead and do so. Come support local independent businesses and music. Green Frog Cafe in Palouse is having open mic nights every first Friday of the month. Acoustic music only. Green Frog Cafe is located at 110 Bridge Street, Palouse, Washington. For more information, contact Green Frog Cafe, 878-1490. Look at that. Glenn's not here, and I do it perfect the first time through. Ah, jeez. All right. This I'm going to read because it's a special announcement from the old guest host of the PES, Life. The WSU's Gamers is putting on Civilization 4 LAN training event in preparation for the national online tournament next weekend. Come in at any time to play and earn a chance to win one of three free copies of the full version of Civilization 4. The training event is located at the upper level of the Q Computer Lab. Listen this weekend for your chance to win a copy of Civilization 4. For more information, contact Life at 509-844-6228. If you're interested in a public service announcement just like the ones you just heard, then come by the KCUU office or go online and fill out a PSA form with all the information of your event. For more information, call Lucas at 335-2208. And before we get into the State of the Union that we've been promising now for a couple weeks, we have a caller on the air who wants to talk about the Gonzaga Bulldogs and Brokeback Mountain. Caller, you're on the air. What's going on?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that was a great interview you had going on with Glenn Johnson there. It was really interesting.
You liked it? What did Glenn have to say that you liked?
Well, specifically, I like how he answered that question you had about the $500. Like, everybody that listens to your show knew where you were going there, and he actually deflected it pretty well.
Yeah, I know.
It's his job.
And he did a good job at it. You know, I mean, the average person wouldn't have been able to do as well. He did a darn good job at it, and... and of course, the question that I had at the very end that was about, does the city of Pullman have a big box ordinance on the, is that coming down the pipe? And he's like, it's not on the agenda. So I was happy to hear that. Anyway, so what about this Brokeback Mountain Gonzaga and the last caller that you wanted to speak about?
Well, first, let's talk about that last caller. And I had a couple of thoughts in regards to what he had to say.
Okay.
First of all, I think that throwing around derogatory terms like that is just as bad as using it towards someone, and it really gives credence to that term, and it's just as disrespectful as anything else can be. I also think it really shows a lack of intelligence to have to use words like that to make a point, because it just makes you end up looking pretty ignorant yourself.
Okay.
I think there's plenty of ways that he could have said that he didn't like what they were chanting and why he didn't like it, but using terms like that to...
Well, how would you have said it?
Well, I mean, you could...
I mean, well, first off, before we go there, do you feel the same way he does? Do you think Gonzaga should have not been doing that chant?
That's kind of a slippery slope there because we're at a university that says F you to like half the schools that come in to our school. So it's one of those things where if you say a Gonzaga shouldn't be doing it, you should go to one of our games and say we shouldn't be doing it first.
Sure.
And, I mean, you see people wearing sweatshirts on campus that have that kind of stuff, so... You're going to start complaining about that kind of stuff. You need to start at home.
But you personally is what I'm talking about. Do you have a problem with it? Did you have, I mean, when you heard about it, did you have a problem with the fact that Gonzaga was saying Brokeback Mountain to a guy that had posed for a picture?
You know, I don't have a problem with it in the sense that it's something that's in sports nowadays.
Sure.
Now, myself, I don't participate in those kind of chants because I really don't think they have much of a place in sports. But there's not really a lot that I can see that you can do about it. I mean, what are you going to do, penalize the fans each time it happens?
Well.
That's something the football did, I know, a few years back with the loud crowd penalty.
Right.
Gave 15 yards or something like that. But, I mean, if they gave technical fouls to fans, if they started doing chants like that, maybe that's something to do.
That would be interesting. So, anyway, what was your comment on that?
That was pretty much just my comment. I was... thinking that he needed to rethink exactly what kind of a stance he was trying to take in making his own point.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Your point's well taken. So anyway, did you actually hear the Brokeback Mountain chant when it was being, did you see it on the news or anything, or did you even hear about it until you heard it on the show?
Didn't hear about it until I heard it on the show.
Ah, look at that. Newsbreakers! Anyway, well, I appreciate your call, and I hope you have a very good day then.
All right, have yourself a good one, too.
All right, see ya. Bye. Cool. And if anybody else had any comments, you could always give us a call, 335-2207. In the meantime... I think we'll finally get to it, Tom. It's been weeks in the coming.
And no one will care compared to Brokeback Mountain. But
nobody, yeah, exactly. this is there's a few other things going on too with the whole minimum wage increase and stuff. Did we ended up talking about that a little bit?
I think we did. I know you talked about that with April because as a business owner, you know how that affected her.
How that's going to affect her exactly. Mm-hmm. So anyway. Let's talk a little bit about the State of the Union address. I have one comment I wanted to do, and then we'll go, and I think you probably have quite a few comments you want to bring up, so we'll go with it like that,
sure.
If that's cool with you. Okay. And this is a quote from Bush. We must also confront the larger challenge of mandatory spending or entitlements. This year, the first of about 78 million baby boomers turning 60, including two of my dad's favorite people, me and President Bill Clinton. This milestone is more than a personal crisis. It's a national challenge. The retirement of the baby boom generation will also put unprecedented strains on the federal government. By 2030, spending for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid alone will be almost 60% of the federal budget. And I'm stepping away from George Bush here for a second. As we heard today, Glenn Johnson was saying 55% of the city of Pullman budget goes to police and fire. Could you imagine if 60% went to retirement? You would only have 40% instead of 55% to go to police and fire, and you'd have no roads, no parks, no anything else.
Right, yeah, it would be a disaster.
That's huge. We got to think about that. So anyway... And this will present future Congresses with impossible choices, staggering tax increases, immense deficits, or deep cuts in every category of spending. Congress did not act last year on my proposal to save Social Security, yet the rising cost of entitlements is a problem that is not going away. And with every year we fail to act, the situation gets worse. And what did the Democrats do right about that point?
They
stood up and cheered. Thank you, Democrats. I am going to be happy in the year 2030 when 60% of every dollar I spend that goes to the federal government goes to pay for your retirement because you're happy that we're not doing anything about it. Thank you, Mr. Democrat. Thank you for cheering and showing how much you hate us.
Yeah, the whole Social Security thing is a real ticking time bomb, but... apparently, it just can't be touched even with a 100-foot pole. You know, despite President Bush's best efforts last year, it just really fell on dead ears. The American public, I don't think, was really energized to demand change. Certainly, the Democrats did everything they could to. They kept deflecting the argument back towards Iraq versus Social Security,
sure.
and then Hurricane Katrina came along, and by that time the wheels had pretty much come off anything, any kind of Social Security reform. So I mean, I think he brings up a great point. I mean, I think it's something that most Americans really don't think about. They don't know about it. They haven't researched it. They don't know what a critical issue it is. I think a lot of people just feel like, well, you know, I'm young. I don't care. Retirement's a long way away.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, everyone falls into that trap, you know.
And exactly.
Regardless of Social Security, I think most people today don't realize that Social Security is not going to take care of them. And no. That's a whole other issue when you start getting into people saving for retirement. Exactly. You know, their IRAs.
Anybody who's banking on Social Security is an idiot.
Yeah, you know, there's IRAs and 401ks and things like that to think about, and people just aren't thinking about it. So if they're not thinking about their own personal retirement, they're certainly not thinking about, you know, the solvency of the Social Security system. And yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a dry issue. It's boring. It's numbers. It's things that are 30, 40, 50 years down the road. And given the ADHD of the American public these days, you know, I really wonder if anything could be done about an issue
Hey,
like
Tom,
that.
Hey, Tom, look at the bird out the window.
Yeah. Well, the American public's attention span is about 5 seconds. You know,
sure.
If you can't do Social Security in something like a 30-second Super Bowl commercial and make people, you know,
exactly.
That's it. You've got 30 seconds to get their interest, and Social Security is not an issue that's going to be like that. So,
well, you know, I came up with an idea of how to fix the Social Security system, Tom, and I'll play it out for you and see what you think about
it. Okay, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, now, first off, I know that the government's role in life is not to prepare me from cradle to grave. It's not a socialist government. It's not their job to make sure that I retire happy and healthy. It's their job to make sure there's an infrastructure in place for me to take part in, and I can do as I choose. If I choose not to be wise, and if I choose not to prepare myself for the end days, then you know what? They're going to be sucky end days.
Right.
But it's the grasshopper ant thing. I could be the grasshopper and mess around until the going gets tough, and then I'm hosed. Or I could be the ants and I could prepare. You know, and the thing is, anybody who honestly thinks that the Social Security is going to be enough to live on is sorely, sorely mistaken. So here is my solution to fix 100% and forever the Social Security problem in the United States of America. The solution to the problem is drawing a line in the sand. It's as simple as that, Tom. Just draw one line in the sand.
Yes.
That line will be drawn January 1st, 1985. Okay. January 1st, 1985. There's a line drawn in the sand.
Okay.
If you are born January 1st, 1985, or beyond January 2nd, 1985, January 1st, 1995.
Mm-hmm.
You're beyond that line in the sand.
Yes.
Guess what? Social Security's not going to be there for you.
Right.
Period. Not at all.
Right.
Nothing. But, you know what? You're going to still pay into it. You know, that really sucks. I'm paying into some system that I'm not going to get the money out of. But guess what? You do that all the time right now. You pay a lot of taxes that you don't necessarily get the straight-up benefit of.
Right.
That's the system of taxes. The money goes to a whole bunch of public things you don't necessarily do. So anyway, yes, it sucks to be somebody who's going to be paying some money into Social Security and everything like that for a certain amount of time, but here's the thing. You are paying money into Social Security, and those who are eligible for Social Security over time will start dying off, and pretty soon those who are eligible will be such a small number that those who are paying into it will be paying such a small amount of money it will be hardly noticeable on their taxes. They might be paying 2 or 3 cents a year once everybody's all together. The last guy who goes, Social Security's done. Not a single person will ever have money taken out of their paycheck again for a socialist program called Social Security. That's my solution to the Social Security problem. So everybody who had been banking on it through the, you know, that grew up in the 40s and grew up in the 50s and the 60s.
Right, it'll still be there for them.
It's going to be there for them. And those of us who are born now that are young enough that we're going to still have a full life of work ahead of us, we're going to have the ability to put money away. We're going to have the ability to put money into retirement accounts, and we're going to have this ability, and we're not going to sit there and go, you know what, I don't care about retirement. I got Social Security when I get to retirement age, and look at retirement age. What has it done over the years? It keeps going up and up and up
and
up.
And we'll continue to do so.
And I guarantee by the year 2030, if nothing is done and that 60% of the budget is going out to the baby boomers and everybody else for their Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid health benefits, I guarantee the age of retirement will be 80. 80.
Yeah.
Do you want to retire at the age of 80? Heck no.
Yeah, eventually the line of the age of retirement will continue to go up until it meets the average life expectancy.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way to keep the system solvent would be to do it where basically you'll die before you get any benefit.
We are seeing socialism fail right before our very eyes.
Yeah, Social Security really was never meant to be a forever entitlement program. I mean, theoretically, it was just started during the Depression to help out the elderly people at that time. But that program, of course, you know, once the government gets its nose into a big trough of money, you know, there's no way it's ever... I mean, how many taxes or programs do you ever hear of that actually go away? It never happens. So, and Social Security is like that. And now it's such a gigantic... behemoth. There's so many special interest groups that are just pledged to, you know, supporting it that, you know, it's very sad. I mean, I agree. I think you have an incredibly great idea. I will be the campaign manager for your Senate campaign, but I don't think it's got a snowball's chance of doing anything. You know, you look at an organization like the AARP, you know,
exactly.
Has one of the most incredible,
thinking about them in the back of my
strongest mind. Lobbies in the country because... frankly, old people vote. You know,
right.
Elderly people are the ones that come out and vote. I mean, and I think that's great. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'm just saying
it's a fact they come out and vote because they're the vote.
Yeah, I've worked plenty of polling stations before. I've seen a van pull up and a woman get out of the van with a walker and an oxygen tank. She was probably 95 years old. But, you know, by God, she was going to get out and cast her vote that day. And like I said, I think it's great. I think they should, you know, be able to do that. But the problem is that, you know, the AARP and other organizations like that tend to maybe play on the fears of elderly people when it comes to things like Social Security. And so they wield an incredible amount of political power. So any person that were to ever stand up and politically say, you know, what you just said about ending Social Security, while it makes an incredible amount of sense, you know, would be thoroughly whipped in any election
right.
in which they ever were to participate in.
And what I don't understand about it is it's not that we're trying to get rid of Social Security for the poor old grandmas who are banking on it right now.
Right.
We're talking 60 years down the road.
Sure.
We're talking a lifetime for a lot of people. We're not talking about, and that's the thing about, you know, like George Bush's plan for Social Security. It wasn't to get rid of it and grandma and grandpa are going to get kicked out on the street.
Right.
That's idiotic. And, you know, it's almost like the Democrats want to have such control over people's retirements and every other part of people's lives that they're afraid to give up the control they have over people's life. And you know what's the most ironic thing is that more times than not, when I hear this said, it's power corrupts, absolute power absolutely corrupts. And here's the thing. Democrats are the ones who say that all the time to me. I hear that continuously from Democrats. But they're the ones who want the power. They don't want to give it up. They're the ones who
exactly.
say, I got to hold on to Social Security because if I hold on to it, every single American I have power over.
Well, yeah, because you know the thing is, if you create these entitlement programs and people become dependent upon them, then there's this whole infrastructure that has to be put into place to support that. And so it's like you said, it's a power thing. You know, there are people, there are hundreds of thousands of jobs. There's all this bureaucracy that is now a part of this and supporting all this, and much of that is political. And so there's many people who have a vested interest in making sure that this continues. It has nothing to do with the retirees that are receiving the benefits, but just people's jobs that are, you know, associated with this program. I mean, all that money from Social Security goes somewhere. And a lot of people are making, you know, from nursing home owners to drug companies and medical companies, you know, doctor's offices. And there's a lot of people that get a lot of money out of all of this Social Security.
And they might actually be forced to compete for the money from people if they...
Exactly.
If they had their own money to spend and it wasn't just some blank government faceless check. And, you know, and I think that's part of the reason why we'll never get rid of the federal income tax system as it stands.
No,
the whole idea of a flat rate. It's like, okay, it's 12% of your money no matter what. You send it in, it's 12%. You're not getting anything back. Life's done. It's over with.
Right.
And I think it... And the reason why they're not going to do it is we go into a recession. Think about all those tax accountants. Think about the IRS. Everybody, there would be so many people out of jobs.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But
yeah,
the thing
tax attorneys. And
oh, yeah.
There's a whole industry associated with all that. So
personally, just a side note, I heard somebody else say this. I can't remember who. I'd love to give them credit for the idea. Maybe you've heard this before, too. But I think what needs to happen is at the end of every single month that you get out your checkbook and you write, Internal Revenue Service, and then write exactly how much money you need to pay them and send a check in every single month. Instead of having it automatically deducted from your taxes, because then all of a sudden you get this fatty check, and then all of a sudden you're writing a check for $600 or $700 every single month to the government, and you're going to go, you know what? I really do care about what you're doing with my taxes. I'm really going to start making a voice.
Right.
When it's out of sight, out of mind, exactly. Which it is, it's like, you know, they just, up to you know, because if I'm writing a check every single month for $372.12, and then one day I have to write a check for $382.15, my taxes just went up. And I just notice it very well. You know, it's that kind of stuff. I'm sorry to get off topic, Tom, but...
No, I think you're making a great point. You know, I mentioned earlier about the short attention span of the American public, but much of that, I think, is to blame of the federal government, not just the federal government, but state governments and any government, I guess, for that matter. You know, part of, I think, what their job is to keep people asleep. I think they don't want people to know every single thing that goes on, because, like you said, if people had to sit down and write out a check every month for how much federal income tax they owed, or if they had to sit down and then write out a separate tax for all the Social Security tax that they were paying for that month, I think you might see a lot more people getting politically involved in this country. And
that would be a bad thing for those who aren't.
Yeah, and the government doesn't want to do that. They'll do everything they can to, like, oh, let's make it easy. Yeah, we'll deduct it right out of your check, and, you know, we'll direct deposit this, and whatever we can do to facilitate it, you know, just to keep you all kind of fat, dumb, and happy, then, you know, that's perfect for us. So, and I think that's bad. I think the government should want people to be more politically involved, but I think we've gotten to such a point of bureaucracy. There's just this giant fat bureaucracy that they really don't want the people stirring up trouble and you know, and ruining everything. So it's not in their best interest to do that. So
very true. So that was from the State of the Union address. That was like the one thing that really stuck out in my mind, was the applause of the Democrats,
right?
That they were so proud.
Oh, of course.
That they were like, so proud.
Another year of no Social Security reform.
Yeah,
you know, we'll keep hounding Bush so much on Iraq that nothing will ever happen to us.
I can't understand how they were so proud. I mean, they were proud.
Yeah, it's very sad, because, I mean, it will reach a crisis point one day, and someone eventually will have to deal with it. I mean, we can only put it off for so long, and then there will be a big crisis, and... You know, and then something bad will happen, and then there will be all the inevitable congressional hearings afterwards about what went wrong and finger pointing, and we only have ourselves to blame.
Oh, no, so. We could blame Bush.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
He should have put a plan forth. We would have voted for it, we promise. Just have him put a plan for it.
Well, ultimately, everything is his fault anyway, so whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
Global warming, you know, whatever, it's all his fault. So.
You know, it's total side note. Bush, Cheney. Cheney shot his hunting partner, and it's a cover up because it wasn't given to the news within 24 hours. You know, I don't know why a hunting accident has been getting such news coverage that this one has. Yeah, I mean, but it's like, come on, you got to be kidding me. I'm sure we're going to find a way to blame George Bush on this, though, shortly.
I knew as soon as I heard that, my first reaction was like, oh no, this is the last thing that, you know, the administration needs now. Whenever it seems like they're starting to make some progress forward, there's always, you know, some incident that comes up that throws things back. And I knew that, you know, the press was going to have a field day with this, which is really ridiculous, because it could have happened to, you know, to anyone. I mean, there's already the conservative backlash. You know, the conservative bumper stickers are coming out that I'd rather hunt with Dick Cheney than ride home with Ted Kennedy. So, you know. So there's still those.
Wow.
You have to kind of put things in perspective. And there's been some other funny. I think the funniest conspiracy theory I've heard yet is that this was all staged for Scooter Libby's behalf. And, you know, I don't remember the scene in The Godfather where this took place. I think it might be from, someone said The Godfather, but I actually think it might be that movie Goodfellas instead of the Godfather movies. You know, where they took a guy out hunting. You know, it's like, oh, come hunting with us. You know, and then there's like the quote-unquote hunting accident. You know, a lot of guys out there. And so, yeah, that's what the one columnist was saying, is that, you know, who knows, maybe this was all on purpose, and that that Cheney shot, you know, this lawyer guy to kind of prove to Scooter Libby, it's like, you better not talk, Libby, because, you know, next thing you know, you're going to be catching a face full of buckshot or whatever. So, and it's been kind of funny, but I think the media, as usual, liberal press is making, you know, way, way, way too much out of it. I mean, certainly it was an accident, and people should realize that, you know, that accidents happen all the time, and, you know, people should be more concerned about the person that was shot versus, like, you know, right. Yeah, where's the sympathy for that man versus, you know, let's try to find out what Cheney was doing that was wrong. So,
yeah,
but yeah, it's just typical politics, and poor Cheney. I mean, he'll always probably be remembered for that. You know, Dan Quayle was always remembered for misspelling tomato.
I think it was potato.
Or potato, tomato.
I really make stuff up, man. You can't believe anything he says. Hey, I'll blow your freaking head off. Hey, look out, son. That's dangerous. You're going to spill your beer.
That's probably what was going on out there.
Exactly. Exactly.
They want all the... Yeah, anyway.
So yeah, South Park usually has it right anyway, so they know what's going on.
Oh, is that the case? Let me tell you this. Okay, anyway.
So but yeah, back to the State of the Union speech. The thing that I found the most interesting, or the part that I kind of focused on the most, was Bush's cry for energy independence. And, you know, we've been hearing this cry for energy independence ever since President Nixon was in the White House, you know, back in the days of the first Arab oil embargo. And, you know, it's really interesting. It's a very noble, it's a noble thought, but I still question the motivations and if it's the right policy. You know, like I said, going back to the 70s, there's been a heck of a lot of money spent by the Department of Energy on coming up with alternate sources for fuel, and some of those technologies are pretty mature by now. But, you know, the problem is it all keeps coming back to the free market and economics, and unfortunately, you know, oil, petroleum products are still, you know, despite how much the price of gas has gone up and despite all the political uncertainty sometimes associated with it, you know, petroleum still ends up being the thing that makes the most economic sense, and that's why people continue to use it. It's not that it's a conspiracy by the oil companies or the car companies or anything else to try to suppress all these miracle technologies. You know, the technologies are all out there, and people have found, you know, a variety of... I've done some research, and it's amazing just to hear some of the variety of methods that they've come up with. But it's still, you know, it still makes the most economic sense. You know, petroleum is still very easy to process, and it doesn't use a lot of energy in manufacturing itself. Like, for example, I saw a commercial last night. You know, GM has got a new campaign where it's like something about green and go yellow or something. You know, I guess they're going to be coming out with a line of cars that run on ethanol, which is, of course, primarily made from corn. You know, and that's great, but the problem is ethanol... Well, there's a couple problems with ethanol. One is that ethanol is not as energy efficient as gasoline is, so the performance is a lot less when it's in the engine. So typically ethanol has just been used as an additive versus being the complete fuel, because it's only has about two-thirds the energy of gasoline. And then the other big problem with ethanol is with corn. You know, corn is very intensive to grow. You know, they have to go dig up. You know, they have to disc the fields and the rows, and then they have to plant the seeds, and then it has to be harvested. And all this involves using, you know, tractors and things like that. So the numbers that I've read, that it shows that that uses about 80%. It takes 80% of the energy to produce this ethanol. So, you know, what it's going to end up doing is basically, if we produce more ethanol, it's going to end up increasing our dependence on petroleum products, because there's going to be that much more diesel and gas and things that farmers need to use for their tractors and things like that. So, you know, again, it's real interesting, especially when, you know, we seem so focused on trying to find these alternatives, and yet petroleum, you know, we still have a lot of reserves available. You know, there's the shale petroleum reserves that are in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. And then, of course, you know, there's the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve, which, you know, has been a real political hot potato. And our senator from Washington, Maria Cantwell, made sure that, you know, that got shot down the latest time that, you know, that it came up. And there's still a tremendous amount of oil products that are available offshore that still, you know, are to be exploited. So, you know, there's the U.S. could certainly do a lot to decrease its dependency on foreign oil just by turning to a lot of our domestic sources, but I don't know. It just seems that we're so caught up in the whole environmental aspect that we're really kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, you know. And
sure. Let me ask you a question about the whole foreign oil versus domestic oil thing.
Yes.
So, we have, you know, we're getting a lot of oil from foreign sources, and if what everybody says is correct, oil is a limited resource. It doesn't replenish itself. Therefore, once the foreign sources run out of oil, they're out of oil. And if we use their oil up first, then we go to ours. But why wouldn't that be a smarter thing than using our oil up and then going to somebody else's where they could rob us blind, which obviously is already happening. But
right.
You know what I'm saying? No, it's like, let's use the other oil when we can afford it. And then when we're down to our, you know, once we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, hey, look at that, we got all this oil in America. And, you know, that would be a whole new boom in prosperity for Americans.
Sure. I agree. And maybe that's part of the strategy that we've had in not, you know, exploiting our oil resources more than we have, is because, you know, foreign oil has until recently been relatively cheap, and we haven't had to deal with all of the, you know, when we're importing oil from other countries, we don't have to deal with all the environmental regulations that, you know, they have, you know, we have to deal with here. So as far as exploring and things like that for American companies to drill oil in foreign companies, it makes a lot more economic sense. So, yeah, I think, you know, ultimately things tend to work out the way the market wants them to. You know, the government can say things like, you know, Bush can talk about things, but ultimately it's the market that dictates, you know, how these things go. So that's why that was real interesting, you know, to me. Is it's just, you know, yet another call by yet another president for, you know, for energy independence and for alternative methods of, you know, gas and things like that. But I still think, you know, ultimately it'll be the market that makes, you know, the decisions like that, and which you said was a good example of that. You know, use up all the foreign oil first. So
okay. So I don't know what I mean, I guess my only concern with my idea of using their oil than using ours is, what if by the time we do get to use ours, there truly is a better source? But then again, oil is a great lubricant, and you got all sorts of other uses of oil. So
yeah, I mean, oil will, there'll always be a demand for petroleum, you know, because it's used so much in plastic and things like that. I mean, I know they're probably developing alternatives for things like that, but again, it comes down to cost. You know, in general, petroleum is very easy to get out of the ground. It's relatively easy to transport, and it's relatively easy to refine. You know, it's a well understood technology, and I think at least in the foreseeable future there'll be a demand for it. I mean, even if alternative forms of gas are developed, I think petroleum products will still be used. You know, we have things like natural gas. You know, many homes, including my own, use natural gas for heating and things mm-hmm. like that, and that's a petroleum byproduct. And you know, and I think probably most homes built recently in the last 20 years probably use natural gas, you know, versus
electric.
Electric, which is right. Very expensive, and or things like oil, which, of course, you know, people don't use oil or coal anymore to heat their houses. So there'll be that demand for petroleum, I think, you know, for a while in the future. So, and it's really interesting how this relates to Washington State, too, because, of course, there's been a lot of talk in this latest session in Olympia about biodiesel, and how Washington could become a major player in the biodiesel arena. Biodiesel is extracted from vegetable oils. I'm certainly no expert on this. If there's any callers out there, I'm sure here at WSU with all the people we have in plant sciences and things like that, there's you know, some people that are a lot more expert on the subject than me. It's real interesting, like I said, the potential that it has for Washington State, and I've kind of been following it, and there's a lot of political, you know, buzz about it. And actually, biodiesel is being used quite a bit now by state mandate. Like, I several hundred of the buses in Seattle bus system use biodiesel. I guess most of the Washington State ferries run on biodiesel, and they're mandating even more usage of it, like at the Port of Seattle and things like that. So, but by biodiesel, these are like 20% products, where it's just 20% biodiesel and then 80% regular diesel. You know, but living here in Whitman County and in Pullman, in the middle of the wheat growing areas, you know, the biggest source that's been identified in Washington State. I mean, there's many different sources for the vegetable oil. Soybeans are a major source, and but here in Washington State, the focus has been primarily on canola. You know, which are those beautiful yellow flowers you see in the spring that are growing in the fields around here. And so, before we could ever have any kind of serious, you know, the refinery infrastructure they're trying to put into place and things like that, but until the farmers actually switch over to growing canola, then, you know, there's just not going to be the supply. We'd have to import the oil, the canola oil, from other places like the Midwest or Canada if we were going to refine any here in Washington State. And again, you know, it comes back down to, you know, to economics and the market. And you know, the problem is that the oil that's extracted from the canola is actually not worth that much. You know, most of what's left over from the canola is just, you know, the byproduct, you know, the actual chaff, I guess, or whatever, after what's left over after it's crushed. You know, and there's just not really a market for that. You know, they can use it for high value organic fertilizer. It can also be used for animal feed, but you know, that's not going to bring that much of a profit to the farmers, you know, at this point. So there's not the incentive there for the farmers to say, especially like in the Palouse area, to, you know, plow over their wheat fields and start putting in canola. The financial incentive is just not there yet. So and that's a similar story with a lot of these different, you know, alternative fuel technologies. Is it sounds great and they work. It's just, you know, how do you get people, you know, to grow it? You know, how do you take a really, really good cash crop like wheat and plow that field over, you know, to put in something like canola, which can be used to make this biodiesel, but yet doesn't return as much profit to the farmer? So it'll be interesting, I think, to see over the next few years what happens, you know, with this alternative fuel technology. So
I want to try something here.
Okay. You get to the top, get hooked in, and then you look over the edge. Super smooth. I was like, no way am I jumping off this tower. I'm staying right here.
Okay. This sounds like
am I ever going to be good enough to be a Marine?
Okay.
When it was all said and done, watching the Color Guard raise the American flag, I thought, I am a United States Marine.
PFC Keith Balkan knows you don't join the Marines. You become one. Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES.
That's not the one I was looking to play. Let's try this then real quick here. That's probably not it either. Let's see here.
What was... Yeah, that was...
that was a Marine PSA right there. I'm looking for a very particular PSA. And
okay.
I thought I counted the numbers correctly, but they don't have, like, a number of which one they want to play, so let's try this.
How many impulse purchases did you make this week?
Alicia Willis of the Employee Benefit Research Institute.
Try giving up some of those less necessary.
Okay, I really wish they would have... Okay, let's see here. 2005, no, that's not telling us a darn thing. Okay, so what we're going to do here is I really wish it would have gone right into the one that I was looking for, because it was so pertinent to what we have been talking about today. And I don't know, maybe it's one of these very, very, very first ones here. Because there's like, I don't know, we'll see here. I'm sure I'll find it here.
Okay.
Let's do this.
All right.
We'll in 1935, FDR signed the Social Security Act, providing all Americans with a supplement to their retirement savings. The rest was up to us. Ida Mae Fuller knew that. She was the first to receive a monthly Social Security check. The amount, $22.54. Chances are that couldn't pay all of the bills, even in the 40s. Good thing she had other savings, because she lived to be 100 years old. Here's hoping we can all afford to live as long as Ida. Choose to save, because that's the way it is.
There you go. You found it.
So, yeah, I did. It was sort of hidden. Actually, that wasn't quite the one. This is the one I was really looking for.
Okay. Social Security and Medicare. Huh?
Dallas Salisbury is CEO of the Employee Benefit Research Institute.
Social Security and Medicare are vital parts of any retirement plan, and yet many Americans don't know how they work or what they offer. Take the time to learn about all aspects of your retirement future.
Visit www.choosetosave.org for tools to help you prepare for your financial future.
Your life, your choices, choose to save.
Anyway, I don't know, you know, I honestly don't know where this came from or what their
These all sound like federal government PSAs.
Yeah, it must be what it is, because they have this little. Supposedly, this one's supposed to be about drinking and driving.
Okay.
Here's to conversation over dinner out instead of over TV.
I'm telling you, this does not tell you what. It's like a crapshoot. I'm just like, that should be the right one. No.
Enjoy adult beverages. Oh. And drive responsibly.
There we go.
Okay.
Drink and drive responsibly.
Enjoy adult beverages and drink and drive responsibly. Interesting. I like that, man.
And save money while you're at it for your retirement.
Yeah. Exactly. When you're driving home responsibly drunk.
And I guess if you have too much to drink, you could go join the Marines later. So
there we go.
Jump off that tower.
It's called the Radio Disc Pack Public Service Announcements Fall Winter 2005. Okay. And I just I saw the stuff about Social Security, and I just thought it'd be interesting to throw them on the air if I could ever find them.
Oh, that was interesting. No, that was good. Urging people to save, because that's probably the one thing that Americans really need to do more of that they don't do. I forget. I heard something on the radio the other day about how, in comparison to other countries, you know, how much Americans save versus other countries. And it's pretty low. A lot of other countries, people in other countries save a lot more money than we do. We're definitely a nation of spenders. So
go into debt, people.
Yeah, and debt. I mean, look how much debt
I was thinking about that today, of what we're doing around this campus. We're putting ourselves in so much debt on so many of these projects. I mean, we got the student rec center that happened a couple years ago. We got the Bookie Mall that's coming in.
Yes.
That's going to replace the Cub. I'm sure they're not going to tell you that's replacing the Cub, but when you got to pay $240 a year to go shopping, and when a place is going to take 25% of your total student space for retail, on top of the retail space that's going to exist, and the fact that some student organizations that had been here were being told we're not going to have enough room for you, you got a question. Is that the Cub or is that the Bookie Mall?
Right.
And we're going in debt for this. And now they want to do the stadium. And it's like, well, let's spend all this money now and get it now, and then we'll pay for it 20, 30 years down the road. Why don't we do things the right way and get a lot of money up front, or all the money up front, and then put it in process?
Yeah, the concept of living within your means is especially not prevalent in government these
days. No, it's not. And the government's teaching us how to do it wrong.
You know, it's funny going back to Glenn Johnson, when he was on earlier.
Yep.
It's funny because you know the state of Washington right now, we happen to enjoy a surplus, but that hasn't been the case in recent years. You know, we've had a lot of deficits, and we're talking about WSU and the deficits that they're going to be incurring. But for some reason, the state of Washington mandates the poor local governments like Pullman to have a balanced budget. So by law, the city of Pullman has to balance its budget every year. So that's why sometimes you see with our local governments, Glenn Johnson mentioned, well, $14 million, for the water out to the new quarter development. $14 million, it seems like a lot to me, and I'm sure it is to the city of Pullman. But you were just talking about, like, the projects here at WSU. That's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, we're talking $60, $70 million projects.
That would be nothing for WSU to come up with $14 million plus to do something. But for the poor city of Pullman, since they're forced to have, a balanced budget, they don't have the luxury of going out and taking out some huge loan for $14 million to float, to float that debt to put in the water, which everyone knows would be the great thing to do.
You know, and what's interesting also is when you brought up Glenn, the thing about the water treatment plan and how they knew ahead of time they had to do something.
Exactly.
So rather than waiting for the last minute going, oh, where are we going to get the money? They worked in saving money.
Yeah, because when by law you have to balance your budget, you live within your means, and it's just too bad that the rest of the government can't apply that, to itself. The same thing that they force on the cities of Pullman, they can't force that on the federal government and the state government or the universities, for that matter. Like, sorry guys, you gotta have a balanced budget by law, so you may have to do without stuff, or in the case of the water treatment plant, you may have to save for it for a while. You know it's coming. You want something, got to put aside some reserve money for that. You can't just go out and stick it to the students. So
exactly. And here's I'd just like to say the city of Pullman, I think they're going in the right direction. They I think we got good leadership. We have good council members. We've got good ideas coming in, I believe, with the development we're trying to get along here. I'd like to see something. Rather than, the only thing was, like, when I asked Glenn about Bishop Boulevard going to be filled up shortly, Where are we going to get more commercial space from? And, you know, you'd sort of talked about a couple of places. You know, one of the things was Schweitzer, but that's only 92 acres.
Right.
Really, that's not going to sustain a lot of growth.
No.
Especially when you talk about houses.
And that's going to be mixed, mixed residential and retail.
He had sort of mentioned south of Pullman, the going out towards Jess Ford. But then you've got housing and stuff down there. He talked about the possible south bypass.
Right.
And if that came in, there'd be a long road with a lot of ability. But really, we don't have anything once Bishop Boulevard's gone. And I wonder if the city can look at anything. I don't know if maybe out Terreview Drive and Airport Road and that area, if you go out towards Airport Road. But then you've got the airport there on one side, so you can't really build there.
Right.
And then you don't want to landlock the airport. So, you know, it's one of those things that I'm just sort of curious where the next big building thing is. And the other thing is we need to keep it as close to the city center as possible, I think. I don't want to see us start building so far outside of the city because there's this phenomenon that I see happening. When somebody lives on one side of town, they rarely see the other side of the same town.
Right.
You know, I mean, you talk about Pullman. We're talking a seven-minute commute from one side of town to the other.
It seems kind of
silly. When you're sitting at home and you live in Military Hill and you're like, oh, man, I don't want to go all the way over to Safeway.
It's so far. I know. I'm the same way.
You know, but it's one of those things. I mean, when you have to do it, you have to do it. You know, and it's like we make the trip to Walmart or to Hastings or to the mall in Moscow, which is 8 miles, all the time.
Right.
So once we get the local businesses here, people are going to make the trip. But I'm just saying that it would be sort of nice to try to keep things closer together, closer to the city center, where things are a little bit closer together. Because the whole idea of businesses helping other businesses is they sort of need to be together.
Right.
You know, if you've got a cluster of businesses here, then you build another cluster way away. They're not really feeding off of each other. You need them to be sort of close. And that's what, I mean, I don't know what other options there are, really. Unless Pullman were to get some land, put in a new road somewhere, that's, you know, where is it going to be, though?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm curious, because, I mean, really, I'm trying to think in my head to Bishop Boulevard right now, but there's that one place beside the Jiffy Lube that's still open.
Yeah.
Then there's the area where Walmart will be, and then there's the area between Walmart and Safeway that supposedly has been purchased by Pullman Building Supply.
Right. Yeah, that's not a huge spot.
It's not a huge spot, right. But if Pullman Building Supply moves out there,
sure.
You know, you're going to open up a small place downtown Pullman.
Right.
But, you know, all of a sudden you got from the Safeway, the old Safeway building that's sitting empty, mm-hmm. and they're applauded for it, to the Pullman Building Supply, to Walmart, to the hospital, to the medical center, to the movie theater, to the new eatery place. Then on the other side of the road, you got the hotel, you got the Denny's, yeah. You got the Crimson and Gray, you got the Corporate Point, you got Zeppo's, you got Jiffy Lube, you got one opening, you got the Edison Mall in there, mm-hmm. You got the Safeway, the Shopko, the Schwab, we're out of space. It's done. It's gone.
Yeah,
what are we going to do?
It's not hard to see it being completely filled up in a couple of years easily. With stuff going in. You know, and of course that spot there back behind Crimson and Gray, this is too much of like a cliff back there. I guess there's not really any way they could, I mean, maybe they could fill it in and try to put
water
something
park.
In there.
Yeah, water slide.
Yeah. that's about it. Yeah, or jumping off a tower, you know, rock climbing or something
like
that.
Oh, there you go.
And there might be some room behind the hospital, too, because with Fairmount Drive running,
sure.
You know, there might be not a huge spot, but a little spot to put something back there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of space.
Behind the hospital. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, we're going to run out of room.
But I sort of wonder if the hospital's trying to hold on to that for their future expansion of more medical buildings and stuff.
Sure.
I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know who owns that land or anything, so I don't know how that's going to be developed. So
anyway, yeah, I mean, it was great to talk to Glenn, and I'm really happy to hear when he said that there's no... You know, there's no big box ordinance on the table, because I'll tell you what, Moscow shot themselves in the foot. They're, you know, the people in Moscow that are applauding the big box ordinance remind me of the Democrats who stood up and applauded George Bush when he said Social Security reform was not done. They're idiots. Plain and simple. They're idiots. They're not looking at the future. They're looking at right now, right at this very minute. Right at this very minute. They have no future outlook on anything, because if they could look into the future, they would realize, you know what? In 20 years, we're going to be sitting where Pullman was now. And in 20 years, we're going to be spending most of the budget on retirement for people.
Well, and what's so silly is they don't have to look at the future. The future is there right now. I mean, that new Lowe's development is already at the point of SEPA approval. You know, it won't be much longer before they'll have their site plan approval, and construction will probably start in the spring. So this isn't 20 years. It isn't 10 years. It's now. I mean, they're looking at the future right now. They're looking at a 700,000-plus square foot largest retail development in the history of the Palouse, twice as big as the Palouse Mall, and they're looking at it going in starting this spring, and they're continuing to commit ritual suicide by going with this big box ordinance. It's amazing to me, but you know, that's obviously what they've chosen to do, so you know, more power to them. I mean, I guess if they feel like that's the government they elected and that's the direction they want to go in, so... but yeah, they're going to learn a lot of hard lessons. It's going to be revenge of the Palouse Mall is what it's going to be. So,
yeah, and you know what? I don't really feel very sorry for him. So,
no.
Anyway, we are pretty much out of time. I got one last question for you, Tom.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, I quizzed you a little bit earlier about the Gonzaga and Brokeback Mountain.
Yes.
Here's another quiz. This one is going to stump you, Tom. Really think I got you this time.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. You got to tell me what it means.
Okay.
$261,681.04.
Oh, that's too easy.
Oh, come on.
No, why that number, Johnny, or Karnak, or whatever, would be what is Pard's total cost of Pullman so far? And that's just based on estimated sales tax and property tax. That does not include B&O tax and utility tax, and your mileage may vary, but yeah, that's the cost so far since the appeals were opened back in October.
And if people want to keep up with this daily running total, which is about $1,997 a day,
and 49 cents,
and 49 cents day, yeah, every single day. If you want to keep up with that running total, go to palousatix.blogspot.com and check out what that tally is doing every single day, and every single day it's updated, and what it's costing us so far because of these appeals that are going on for no good reason, because everything that Walmart needed to do to fulfill, to be able to build, has been fulfilled, mm-hmm, but there's still sour apples towards
Walmart. And you heard the mayor earlier say how much we need that money. You heard it from the horse's mouth.
Because we have two choices. We could raise taxes or we could increase the tax base. And the city is wise. They know the better way of doing it is increasing the tax base. Take a little from a lot of people versus a lot from a few people. That's how you make the money.
Yep. And still afford to be able to live here.
Precisely. And anyway, this is Scotty.
And this is Tom.
And this is the PES signing off.
Hello, Peter. What's happening? We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out.
Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil.
What's happening?